Think about how we make electricity. For over a century, the basic recipe has been burn something, boil water, and spin a massive, screaming turbine. But what if you could just skip the spinning blades entirely? It's like staring at a piece of metal heated until it glows, catching that blinding light and turning it directly into power with absolutely no moving parts. We're looking at a piece from Scratchpad called thermophotovoltaics, turning white-hot heat into electricity with no moving parts. Exactly. Thermophotovoltaics, or TPV. It's been a lab curiosity for decades, but a recent breakthrough has suddenly put it at the center of the clean energy race. Let's dig in. Picture a light bulb filament glowing white-hot in a dark room. Now, instead of just using that light to see, imagine wrapping a solar cell around it to harvest the power. That's the core idea of thermophotovoltaics, or TPV. And it's not a new concept. Back in 1956, Henry Colm at MIT built an early demonstration of this. And by 1960, a French physicist named Pierre Agrain was giving these really influential lectures on it. The big realization was that a photovoltaic cell doesn't care where its photons come from. Whether it's the sun 93 million miles away, or a superheated block of material just inches away. Light is light. Wait, so the late 50s? That means we've known how to do this for almost 70 years. If you can generate electricity from heat with absolutely no moving parts, no turbines, no steam, no noise, why hasn't this been powering our homes for decades? What kept it stuck in the lab?
Well, the short answer is that early TPV was incredibly inefficient. We're talking single-digit percentages here. Only a few percent of the incoming heat actually became electricity. When you heat something up until it glows, it radiates a massive spread of wavelengths. But a standard photovoltaic cell can only convert photons that have enough energy to jump what's called a band gap, essentially a threshold to knock an electron free. Most of the light coming off a hot object is in the long wavelength infrared spectrum. These photons are just too feeble. They don't have the energy to excite the cell, so they couldn't generate any electricity. Instead, all that energy was simply absorbed by the cell and wasted as heat. So the cell got hotter, the efficiency stayed terrible, and the whole system stalled.
Right, so it was basically a self-defeating design. You're trying to convert heat to electricity, but instead, you're mostly just heating up your receiver, which probably makes it work even worse. No wonder it stayed on the shelf.
Exactly. For over half a century, TPV was basically a historical footnote locked away in laboratories. It was just too inefficient for anything on Earth, so it was relegated to very specific, expensive niches, like radioisotope power for deep space probes, where you don't have solar power and can't use a turbine. But for the grid, completely impractical. That is, until researchers finally figured out a clever trick to handle those useless low-energy photons. But to understand how they solved that waste photon problem, we should first look at how a modern TPV setup actually fits together.
Okay, here's the thing. If we are skipping the turbine, we need something else to do the heavy lifting. And in a thermophotovoltaic system, it all starts with a white-hot block of material we call the thermal emitter. Picture an old incandescent light bulb filament, but scaled up and pushed to its absolute physical limit. This emitter is running at 1900 to 2400 degrees Celsius. At that temperature, it is absolutely screaming with near-infrared light.
Right. 2400 Celsius is hotter than lava. It's basically a miniature captive sun. And since it is glowing mostly in the near infrared, a standard silicon solar cell, the kind you see on a neighbor's roof, won't do the trick. Silicon is optimized for visible sunlight. If you put it next to this emitter, it would miss almost all of that infrared glow because its band gap is too high. A photon has to have enough energy to knock an electron loose, and infrared photons are just a bit too gentle.
That's where the clever material science comes in. Instead of silicon, scientists are using what they call 3-5 compound semiconductors, things like gallium arsenide and indium gallium arsenide. They engineer these cells to have a much smaller band gap, specifically between 1.0 and 1.4 electron volts. This matches that exact infrared glow of a 2,000-degree emitter perfectly. And they don't just use a single layer, either. The absolute best modern designs stack these materials into tandem, or multi-junction cells. It's like having a double-decker net to catch different sizes of fish.
Spot on. The top layer catches the higher energy photons, and whatever passes through is caught by the bottom layer. It squeezes every bit of electrical work out of that specific spectrum. But here is the catch, Lauren. Even with these perfectly tuned tandem cells, a hot emitter still throws off a ton of long wavelength, low energy photons that are way below that 1.0 electron volt threshold. In the old days, those useless photons would just hit the cell, turn into heat, and cook the electronics. So how do we stop that?
That was the multi-decade roadblock. If you can't handle those lazy, low-energy photons, your efficiency stays in the single digits, and TPV is just an expensive science fair project. But the solution they came up with is so simple, it almost feels like cheating. It's a trick called photon recycling, and it relies on an incredibly shiny mirror placed right behind the cell.
It's basically a highly exclusive club with a very strict dress code at the door. Only the VIP guests, the high-energy photons, are allowed inside to generate electricity. Everyone else, the lower-energy, long-wavelength infrared photons, gets turned away. For decades, those rejected photons just wandered off and warmed up the cell itself, which was pure frustrating waste. This waste photon problem is exactly why thermophotovoltaics stayed stuck on the academic shelf for over half a century. The cells simply couldn't use most of the light the hot emitter was throwing at them.
Hold on. You have this incredibly hot object glowing, but most of that glow is literally the wrong color for the cell to digest? How do you stop that massive waste without just shutting down the heat?
You don't shut it down. You send those photons right back where they came from. The breakthrough that changed everything is the third key component, a back surface reflector. It is essentially a near-perfect mirror placed directly behind the photovoltaic cell. Because the cell is designed to let the low-energy, sub-band-gap light pass straight through it without absorption, those unusable photons travel right through the cell, hit this mirror, and get bounced straight back to the emitter. Once they hit the emitter again, they're reabsorbed, keeping it hot.
Oh, wow. So it's a closed loop. The emitter heats the cell, the cell harvests the high-energy light, and then it literally reflects the rest back to keep the fire going. But a mirror like that has to be incredibly efficient, right? If it's even a little bit lossy, the whole trick falls apart. What are the actual specs on a reflector like that?
You are spot on. The math is brutal here. The system's efficiency is incredibly sensitive to this one component. But the reflectors in the record-breaking modern devices are astonishingly good. We are talking about bouncing back between 93 and 99% of that unusable sub-bandgap light. By recycling nearly all of those low-energy photons, you drastically reduce the amount of external energy you need to feed into the emitter to keep it glowing at 2,000 degrees Celsius.
That's almost a perfect bounce. So instead of wasting that energy as raw heat in the cell, you're using the cell's own waste to insulate the emitter. It's like a high-tech thermos that only lets the electricity escape. It's incredible how one mirror can completely transform the economics of a 50-year-old technology.
It completely redefined the ceiling. This single design move, combining that band-edge spectral filtering with a near-perfect back mirror, is the exact lever that lifted thermophotovoltaics from a low-efficiency laboratory curiosity into a genuine contender for grid-scale energy storage. We went from wasting most of our heat to recycling it on a loop.
When we evaluate how efficient these TPV cells actually are, we can't just grade them on a scale of 0 to 100. We need the ultimate physical yardstick. In thermodynamics, that's the Carnot limit. It is the absolute unbending ceiling for any engine that turns heat into work. It basically states that you can never get perfect conversion because nature demands a temperature differential to do work. The maximum efficiency is determined entirely by the gap between your hot source and your cold sink.
Think of it as a thermodynamic water wheel. Imagine a waterfall. The height of the cliff is your temperature difference. The higher the drop, meaning the hotter the hot side is relative to the cold side, the more energy you can theoretically extract as the water plunges down. If your hot and cold temperatures are close, the waterfall is a trickle and you get almost nothing. But with a massive temperature gap, you have a giant cliff with immense potential energy.
Right. And with TPV, we are talking about a truly staggering cliff. If you run your thermal emitter at 2400 degrees Celsius and keep your photovoltaic cell at room temperature, that Carnot limit, the absolute mathematically perfect ceiling, sits right around 88 to 89%. Think about that. 89% of the heat could theoretically become electricity. That is the ultimate boundary set by the laws of physics.
So to reframe this, when we talk about the latest TPV systems reaching about 40% efficiency, we shouldn't compare them to 100. We have to compare them to that Carnot ceiling of 89%. That means these solid-state devices are actually capturing a bit under half of their absolute theoretical maximum. For something with zero moving parts, that is a massive, massive deal.
That's what makes this so wild. A standard steam turbine, which is this massive, incredibly complex piece of machinery with spinning blades, operates around 35 to 45% efficiency. TPV is hitting that same range, but instead of a giant mechanical room, it's just a silent, solid-state chip looking at a glowing block. It's already capturing half of its theoretical Carnot potential without a single moving part.
And because it operates at such extreme temperatures, that Carnot ceiling is high enough to give it incredible headroom. It means 40% is just the beginning. It's a highly respectable start on a thermodynamic ladder that still has plenty of rungs left to climb. And to really appreciate what that 40% efficiency mark means, we have to look at the massive, roaring machinery that currently runs our power grid. Think of it like a heavyweight match. On one side, you have these legacy mechanical giants, and on the other, this silent, solid-state chip. It's stepping into the ring with the undisputed champions of the industrial age.
Those legacy champions are truly massive. I mean, we are talking about steam turbines, which convert about 35 to 45% of heat into electricity. And then you have the absolute peak of modern power generation, combined cycle gas plants, which can push all the way up to 60 or even 64% efficiency. So at 40%, TPV is definitely competitive with steam, but it's still quite a bit behind the best gas plants.
On paper, yes, it trails gas. But here is the structural twist. Those gas and steam turbines are incredibly complex, and they rely on fast-spinning metal blades. Because of the immense centrifugal forces and mechanical stress, those turbine blades will literally start to weaken and melt if the temperature goes much above 1500 to 1700 degrees Celsius. TPV has a massive unfair advantage here. Because it has absolutely zero moving parts, we can let the emitter get white hot, all the way up to 2400 degrees Celsius. Nothing is spinning, nothing is under mechanical tension, so it can exploit extreme temperatures that would turn a turbine blade into butter.
Okay, so no melting parts to worry about. That's a huge deal for reliability. But what about other technologies that don't use giant spinning turbines? Like, I know we use thermoelectric generators for deep space missions, and people always talk about Stirling engines. How do they stack up?
Well, thermoelectrics are indeed wonderfully robust and solid state, but they are stubbornly inefficient. They typically convert only about 5 to 10% of heat into electricity because of basic material limitations. Stirling engines are much more respectable, hitting 30 to 40%, but they immediately reintroduce pistons, cylinders, and moving parts. That means you're back to worrying about wear, lubrication, and reliability. TPV essentially gives you turbine-class efficiency in a solid-state package that is silent, modular, and requires practically zero maintenance.
It's taking the best of both worlds. You get the high efficiency of steam turbines or Stirling engines, but you keep the silent, indestructible nature of thermoelectrics, all while handling extreme heat that would destroy conventional metal blades. That makes it uniquely suited for things turbines just can't do. Which brings us to the absolute game changer. For decades, TPV was stuck in the low single digits, maybe teens if you got lucky. But in 2022, researchers from MIT and the National Renewable Energy Laboratory published a milestone paper in Nature. They didn't just nudge the needle, they absolutely smashed the 40% efficiency barrier.
Wait, 40%? That is huge! Standard silicon solar panels on a roof are usually around 20% efficient, and they have the entire sun to work with. How did they hit over 40 from just, you know, glowing heat?
Well, they built a tandem cell, which is basically two active semiconductor layers stacked together, with band gaps of 1.4 and 1.2 electron volts. Then they paired it with an emitter running at a blinding 2400 degrees Celsius. The exact efficiency they clocked was 41.1%, give or take about 1%. They also had a second design with slightly lower band gaps that reached 39.3% at 2127 degrees. But that 41.1 mark is the real watershed.
So 41% in a lab is impressive, but why is that specific number such a massive threshold? Like, how does a tiny chip-scale device doing 41% stack up against the actual heavy-duty machines we use on the grid today?
It puts them right in the game. Think about those massive steam turbines that have been the absolute workhorses of power plants for a century. On average, a standard steam turbine operates at about 35 to 45% efficiency. So this tiny, silent piece of semiconductor with absolutely zero moving parts is suddenly performing right in the same league as a multi-ton spinning steel turbine. It is a massive symbolic and practical victory. And it was all made possible by that photon recycling back reflector. By bouncing 93 to 99% of the unusable low energy light back to the emitter to keep it hot, they plugged the massive energy leak that kept TPV in the dark for 60 years.
That's incredible. So instead of a giant turbine hall with steam pipes, high pressure boilers, and constant maintenance, you could theoretically have a solid-state chip doing the same work, just staring at a white-hot block of carbon. That's the vision. It completely redefines what is possible for heat-to-electricity conversion. It proves that solid-state engines aren't just for niche, low-efficiency space missions anymore. They can actually play in the big leagues. Imagine a giant, heavily insulated thermos, but instead of hot coffee, it is filled with solid blocks of carbon, heated until they are glowing white hot at over 2,000 degrees. That is the basic setup for a thermal battery, or what some people call a sun in a box. And thermophotovoltaics is the secret engine that makes it actually work.
So the idea is we take cheap, excess electricity from wind or solar during the day, use it to heat up these carbon blocks, and then just let them sit there until we need the power back?
Precisely. It is basically a giant heat sponge. Because the storage medium is just abundant, cheap carbon, the cost per unit of energy stored can be vastly lower than lithium-ion batteries. You run the excess power through a resistor to get the carbon white hot, insulate it, and then, when the grid is screaming for electricity at night, you open the shutters, let the TPV cells catch that intense infrared glow, and feed power right back into the grid.
Storing heat in carbon sounds simple, but keeping it efficient at scale is another beast. Has anyone actually proven this works outside of a research lab?
They have. Antora Energy, which spun out of MIT, has built a commercial-scale 5-megawatt-hour thermal battery near Fresno, California. It has been delivering continuous, round-the-clock industrial heat and power. They are even reporting TPV systems converting that hot carbon glow at over 40% efficiency in their commercial hardware. Plus, in January 2025, a whole thermal battery alliance was formed to push this technology forward. A 5-megawatt-hour unit already running is huge. And you mentioned other players? Who else is chasing this? There is another MIT spin-out called Forth Power. They are taking a slightly different path, using a combination of liquid tin and graphite systems operating at temperatures above 2,000 degrees. Whether it is carbon blocks or liquid metal, the goal is the same: a solid-state modular system that can store massive amounts of renewable energy for days and discharge it cleanly. It turns TPV from a neat physics trick into the backbone of a reliable, zero-carbon grid. The wild part is, that 41% record, it is absolutely not the ceiling. The roadmap to push past 50% efficiency is already being drawn up. And to get there, we are talking about engineering at some incredibly extreme scales.
Wait, so how did they squeeze another 10% out of this? Are we talking about adding more of those semiconductor layers?
Right, and the strange part is how much of a difference that makes. The first big lever is stacking more layers, going from a 2-junction setup to 3-junction cells. Modeling studies indicate that adding that third layer should push practical system efficiencies past 50%. To put that in perspective, these multi-junction cells are predicted to deliver on the order of 48% more electrical energy from a thermal battery than a single junction cell. You're just slicing up that glowing spectrum so much more efficiently.
Okay, so more layers, better spectral matching. But you mentioned things getting wild. What's the really sci-fi angle here?
It's this mind-bending concept called near-field TPV. Picture a nanoscale gap. We are talking a distance smaller than a wavelength of light, separating the hot emitter and the photovoltaic cell. When you bring them that close, classical physics kind of breaks down. Photon tunneling kicks in, which allows a super Planckian transfer of radiation that far exceeds what standard physics says is possible. It dramatically boosts the power density, meaning you get way more power from the exact same footprint.
Super Planckian. That sounds like something straight out of Star Trek. But if the physics are sorted, what's actually keeping us from building these 50% plus systems tomorrow?
Honestly, it comes down to the old green eyeshade problem: cost. Those record-setting cells are made from 3-5 semiconductors, which are incredible for performance, but insanely expensive compared to standard silicon. For TPV to scale up and actually transform grid storage, the cells have to get much cheaper. We need breakthroughs in reusing the expensive growth substrates, new manufacturing techniques, or entirely new, cheaper material systems. The physics is proven. Now we are waiting on the economics.
So you're reframing the finish line here. It's not about how hot we can get the emitter, but how cheap we can make the catcher's mitt. It's basically a supercar that runs on water, but the engine block has to be carved out of solid diamond. If they can print these 3-5 semiconductors on a budget, we've got a true grid-scale solution.
We have this beautiful, elegant idea from the 50s that is finally a reality. The physics is completely proven. The engineering and economics are the final frontier. Right, because if they can crack that cost barrier, we are looking at a silent, solid-state backbone for the whole grid, literally catching the glow of bottled sunlight.
It is a wild thought. We will be watching to see if the economics can catch up to the physics. Until next time.